Hello and welcome to Columbo is the podcast all about the ancient historical it belongs in a museum world of Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me as always is Ben. That's the worst Harrison Ford impression that we ever heard.
Thanks. I'm glad you said it because I was certainly thinking about
this episode. We're taking a look at season 6, episode 2, Old Fashioned Murder. This episode stars Joyce Van Patten as a curator who murders her brother to keep her museum open. This is Van Patten's second appearance in Columbo. She previously appeared as a nun who tried to give Columbo a new jacket in the Dick Van Dyke-helmed Negative Reaction. Joyce, along with her brothers Dick and Timothy, are part of a large acting family whose collected credits span some of the best-loved projects of film and television. In fact, Timothy Van Patten, beloved by nerds like me for his starring role in The Master with Lee Van Cleef, you remember from Mystery Science Theater, he actually directed the pilot of Game of Thrones. That's what Tim Van Patten has ended up doing.
What he's up to now?
Yeah, he directed a bunch of Sopranos, and he directed the pilot of the Game of Thrones.
Well, good job. I hear the pilot's pretty good.
I know. Acting was clearly not his strong suit. This episode he's fine. This episode sees the return of Tim O'Connor of Buck Rogers fame, who was previously in the episode with the twins.
Oh, yeah.
The twin Martin Landau's. And this episode introduced Celeste Holm, who previously starred in All About Eve with Columbo culprit Anne Baxter, if you remember from a while ago. Not the forgotten lady, the other one about the fading film star.
Who murdered
her husband and put him under the fountain.
I'm with you now. Yeah.
We're all there.
I was like, wait, which lady who murdered her husband? And
she lived on the studio lot?
No, I totally got it.
Okay, we're there. So this episode we just finished, as we do every week. And
weird energy, my friend.
It's a real weird episode. It's at times really good. Like, there are actually times when it's really good, and there are times when it's so bizarre and terrible.
Bafflingly weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, and it's not like in a, well, this is just a terrible episode. It's like, I spent half of the episode, like, wandering through a fog trying to figure out
how any of the pieces connected to each other.
What they were trying to do with the episode. Like, the end, you know, kind of the way that they wrap up and the way that
The last two scenes are very good, I would say.
Yeah, no, they're definitely good. Yeah. But like, there's this very strong, like, it makes me feel like there's a reference I'm missing or something that
I can see what you're saying, that
the episode is a sort of homage to,
maybe. I don't know,
and I only say that because the I guess we have to talk about it at some point, but
sure.
But yeah, the museum and stuff, one of the things that they harp on with this is that this is like an old money kind of family.
Yes,
like tremendous level of wealth to where they, you know, like the level of wealth where you reach just,
I think it's
eccentricity is a bottom line.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're also a family that is not, that their money is running out.
Yeah,
so
no,
there,
absolutely.
There's definitely that as well.
But that's, you know, the kind of sort of, you know, story trope,
right,
that you certainly see, you know, talking about kind of those moneyed old, you know, like, sure, kind of gentry, mm-hmm, for lack of a better shorthand. And just that ending, you know, it just really kind of had the vibe of something that it was
something
trying to pull from or evoke.
Yeah.
And it just didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just didn't quite line up. It was super weird.
It's weird. So let's talk about the bones of this episode, the sort of plot structure, which I think is very good. I think it's got a very that's kind of the problem with this episode, is that it's a very good foundation, but it's just a lot of like nonsense. Like, it's like they built a very, very solid foundation, and then they just put nonsense in kind of in all the holes where there wasn't any story.
So it's like this thing where, like, there are some things that are in sharp focus, and then everything else is kind of like hazy.
Kind of fuzzy.
Yeah, and I don't mean the cinematography. I just mean like that's just literally how some of it feels.
Yeah, for sure.
But I agree with you. I think the kind of the core thread is real strong. You know, Ruth is, you know, the only thing that she has basically at this point is managing the museum,
her relationship with her niece.
Right. Her niece is kind of the best thing outside of it. Her relationship with her brother is strained because he he's basically the bursar, like he's yeah. and he holds the purse,
and she and her sister clearly just openly hate each other,
right? Yeah. Yeah, which is fair.
Yeah,
given
that they both seem like very unpleasant people, that seems fine.
Sure, and also the fact that her sister faints like at the drop of a hat.
Yes, that is a recurring comedy comedy.
Yeah, let's
moment.
Let's call it comedy, I guess.
So let's talk about the murder. So the this museum that's going to go under has a security guard. The security guard is a crook.
Right.
We found out he's been stealing from the museum, just well, little items.
Yeah, supposedly he's been stealing from the museum. He has a track record that isn't great. He's also got a gambling problem.
Yep, his brother, who's mm-hmm. a doctor, is having an affair with the niece character.
Yeah, we find out basically while they are hanging out with each other.
Yes, there's a very weird scene of ADR during the murder,
right,
where this doctor and the niece, mm-hmm. I don't
and
know
his,
either of their names.
Janie.
Janie.
Is the niece.
Janie's the niece.
And his name is Tim. I forgot.
Dr. Tim
name.
Schaefer.
Thank you.
Dr.
Wait,
Tim,
really?
Tim Schaefer.
Tim Schaefer?
Tim Schaefer, yeah, from Double Fine.
Weird.
They're having this, so she's leaving his apartment because they think that the brother has just called to warn them about the wife coming home, I think is what's happened.
Well,
I believe that's what the conversation is.
It's definitely either, if it's not the brother, I didn't pick up it's probably my wife and she likes to let me know
when she's coming home.
Yeah.
But the reason why we're having trouble actually like pinpointing what's happening in that scene is because it's all done in ADR and neither of the actors in the scene's mouths are moving at all.
They're so they're not speaking in that scene. It's just ADR and it is a clear shot of their
mouths. It's a shot of their face. They're not turned or their backs aren't to the camera. They're just walking towards the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Having a silent psychic conversation or something or other. It's very strange. But
a conversation that got written in later is what it is.
Possibly.
Yeah.
But anyway, the brother, mm-hmm. The Joyce Van Patten, whose character name is Ruth,
mm-hmm.
She hires him. She gives him $3,000 and says, come back tonight, rob the place. All of the stuff that you take will be replaced with insurance anyway.
Right.
So just come rob the place. And then in order to throw the heat off of you, we'll convince everyone that you're dead.
Right. And then you can skip the country and, you know, make off with the money that I've given you, which is
what he doesn't know is that this brother who we've established is going to probably liquidate the museum. He's doing an inventory specifically for the purposes of selling off the museum. He's there late at night. So when Joyce comes in, and confronts the security guard who is, Milton Schaefer, she comes in, shoots the security guard.
Yep.
And then when the brother comes in, she shoots him as well.
Yep.
And then, leaves them alone.
Yeah. Then absconds and flips the light switch off on her way out.
Right. And then we get Columbo coming in. I think it's a pretty good murder. I mean, neither of them have powder burns on their hands, which is it's not addressed in this episode because
powder burns aren't a thing in this episode. Tracing phone calls isn't a thing, you know.
It's fine. Yeah. I mean, Columbo either adds or subtracts evidence as it becomes necessary to the plot. Like they just either do or don't worry about it.
It's one of those where it's like, at this point, I'm just like, as long as you're consistent in this episode, fine.
Yeah, that's true.
That's all I want from you.
But
the story just has to be coherent.
But like trying to sort of remember evidence and bring it along episode to episode, that's not a thing.
Nope.
Because like phone records, I think we're in like a fourth
season
very early episode
and
they haven't mentioned it even though like four or five cases could have been like solved
immediately
by consulting phone records, but those apparently don't exist anymore.
Yeah,
they existed for that episode, they don't exist now.
Yeah, so the setup, right, so the murderer looks like they found each other and shot simultaneously.
There's this voice message that Milton left on Tim's phone,
right,
where he said, oh, You gotta help me. They're coming for me. Well, who's that? You don't have to do this. Bang. Yeah. And then, so that's supposed to be the murder, even though he was just shooting a gun into the ground in
into the ground in a payphone that didn't have any glass in it.
Yeah.
If you noticed.
I didn't notice that, but sure. I mean, it's a television payphone. So you can film in there easier.
Right. It's also so that he can fire that blank.
Yeah. Without shattering all the windows.
Yep.
And then proceeds one of the more bizarre episodes of Columbo that we've seen so far.
It's pretty weird.
It's hard to point to a one thing and say exactly why it's so weird, because it's just a weird tone. Here's an interesting, let's play a little game. So this episode was written by Peter S. Fiebelman. That was the name of the guy.
Okay.
Now, Peter S. Fiebelman has a cameo in this episode as a character. Now, take a guess. Which character do you think he played?
Please tell me he's not that fucking cop.
No, he's not, actually. So this is what I thought. Because this... Sergeant Miller, who is the police officer, his performance is so stilted and terrible.
It's so weird, man.
It's completely out of nowhere. It's like... To call it community theater, it's not any kind of acting. He's not acting. He's reading lines, and he is reacting in the most basic way possible to that a human being could react.
He is
providing nothing. He is not elevating or lowering the material. He is simply delivering it.
It's like he just exists to be an exposition machine.
Yes. Has the merest sprinkling of a personality in a couple of shots where he sort of has a smirk while talking to Columbo. Yep. That is it. And Peter S. Fiebelman actually played Milton Schaefer, the security guard, who was great. So
okay. All right.
At
Fair
the
enough.
Very least, you know, hey, he put himself in the episode, but he actually did a really good job.
Oh, so this is like Rocky.
Yeah, a little bit.
Sold the script with the agreement that he could be the star of that.
So actually, this episode, it was written by Peter S. Fiebelman, but it was based on a story by Lawrence Vale, which is a nom de plume for Columbo and Columbo favorite Peter S. Fisher, co-creator of Murder, She Wrote.
So a veteran
Columbo. So right. I think if I was to take a guess, I would say that the bones of the story are a Peter S. Fisher, because those
and then
feel like a Peter S. Fisher.
And then
you know
the rest
I mean?
Are real Fiebelman.
The jail scene, the final scene, the brother and sister having a conversation scene, those seem like classic Peter S. Fisher, Columbo-y sort of scenes.
And they feel kind of airtight.
They feel real and rock solid and like actors reacting and having a conversation. And even a little bit, I would say, the investigation scenes. But the rest of this episode is filler nonsense, like packing peanuts, basically, create the illusion of a hour and a half long episode where really only an hour long. Peter S. Fisher, when he moved to Murder, She Wrote, clearly very well served by the hour-long format versus the hour-and-a-half-long format.
Yep. Yeah, he was like, no, we got this.
He's like, I can write about an hour of material, and somebody can come in and finish the rest. That'd be great. because, that's what that feels like. It definitely feels like this was stretched out in an unnecessary sort
of way. Yeah, no, it's super... Well, it's just weird, you know? It's just those scenes where it's like... The first time that Columbo has a conversation with Ruth after the murder, and she's calm and poised and like, I mean, honestly, this was one of those episodes where I kind of, you know, was like, sort of with the murderer a little bit.
I guess. And she's just so needlessly like cruel some points.
I don't mean 100%. Yeah. I just mean like in comparison to the rest of her family.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, she's... But her brother's not that bad. He just seems like he's kind of money obsessed, but he's not. I mean, level of money obsessed brothers we've had to deal with, he is like in the top 10. He's like Donald Pleasance's brother level. You know what I mean? Where it's like kind of a jerk, but at the same time, like, he just is sort of realistic. Like, yeah, this is a losing money proposition. We probably shouldn't do this anymore.
Right. It's just one of those things of like, hey, we don't have all that. Like, we should
make sure that
we can continue to live.
We can sell this off to somebody else and they can have the museum. There's no, right. There's these things can continue on. Like, we don't have to be doing them.
Because in that scene, it's like, I mean, it's weird because it's like, it's still a Columbo observation, but he just says to her, like, any other woman that I would say I'm from Homicide, and they would faint already or be in distress, and you're just calm.
Yeah.
And that's not normal. And it's like, she could be a self, you know, like, she could be a composed individual. She's not a wilted flower.
Columbo has dealt with strong women before, like in the murder, the one we were talking about previously with the woman, the movie star.
Yeah. And it's not to say that he is consistently, like, you know, patronizing or anything else like that. It's just, it's this weird start. And it's a setup for a joke. Yeah. Because she basically says, don't worry, my sister will faint at the mention.
And she does like five times.
Right. They overuse it so much.
Yeah. There's one that's really good.
Yeah.
That they actually earn it where Columbo says, I got to talk to your sister. He's like, oh God, I hope she doesn't faint again. Cut to her lying on a chair, clearly having fainted, with her feet up. Yeah. Being very sort of overwrought. And that one lands. And if it had been the one previous one and that one, I would have been fine, but it does happen like three or four other times.
Well, and so that's the other thing is it's like all of that sort of turns the rest of this family, the ones that are still living anyway, into caricatures. Because her sister is a caricature, her niece is kind of a caricature.
Right.
Like, she's sweet, but, you know, there's this, like, well, she's kind of an idiot and doesn't actually know anything about anything.
Right.
And it's like, well, that's...
Speaking of Rocky, she's a very she has a very Talia Shire sort of look to her.
Oh, yeah,
like,
absolutely.
That sort of mousy Adrian from Rocky.
She's definitely style. Got that. But even the maid, like, Columbo pokes his head into, like, their house servant. Like, he pokes his head into the kitchen and knocks loudly. And when she turns around and sees him, she shrieks and she throws a water jug onto the ground.
Yes.
And, like, there's a later scene where she's, like, shaking while holding a silver tray with a silver, like, gravy tub in it.
Gravy boat,
yeah. Thank you, gravy boat. It's important to get that.
The gravy tub.
Yep. Gravy tub.
I want to jump in that gravy tub.
I'm going to bathe in it.
I'd love to jump in a gravy tub, but that's just what I want. Don't yuck my yum. So
I'm not. I'm just trying to get it out of my head now. But anyway, so they all kind of, like, they're reduced to caricatures instead of characters.
When the niece, Talia, fake Talia Shire, comes...
Janie.
Comes back from discovering... the bodies.
I forgot about that. Weird and crazy
she, like,
that is.
She's like, oh, Aunt Ruth. And then she, like, walks up to Aunt Ruth and does the stick your
fist
in. I'm not going to do it because I can't talk.
Well, also, we're not going to scream into these mics.
But sticks her fist in her mouth and goes, ah.
Right. And then just completely
then
has
cut,
this weird
cut to,
freak out.
Cut to Columbo driving in like a crazy person.
Yep.
But it's just a very bizarre performance.
Right. Well, and it's a weird thing to go from that where, you know, where it's like you have this surreal kind of over the top.
Yeah.
You know, like, and clearly coached out by a director kind of
performance. It's one of those things that it doesn't feel real and you just wonder how many takes of it did they do to get it and like,
before they went, we're wasting film.
Wouldn't you just say, like, this is not working. We need to figure out a new way
to do this. No, it has to be like this.
Yeah.
This is how I see it in my head, and it'll be perfect.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no. I have no idea, actually.
It's a it's kind of a boring episode visually. It's a lot of, talking heads, like, back and forward, shot, reverse shot. Like,
there is that wallpaper Janie's room
there's interesting set direction, but like, from a directing standpoint, there's not a lot of, like, the sort of exciting...
There's, like, one shot I liked where they do kind of a slow push-in on Ruth's face.
I thought that the shot of the police driving in to the museum had an energy that is almost entirely missing in Columbo. When they're like drive, like how fast and sort of the camera's moving very quickly,
right,
and they're like this handheld thing from the backseat of Columbo's car, and that had an energy to it that is almost all Columbo is locked down shots,
right,
and is very like boring. It's certainly this episode, the entire rest of it was, but this was like frenetic and crazy, right, and had sort of a Starsky and Hutch
kind of funky. And then Columbo rear ends the other police car.
And then it's just another bad joke.
And I think that's it. Is it's like anytime that this episode feels like it starts to kind of do something sort of interesting, it kind of just goes, no, it's a joke.
Blah. Yeah. And it's true. It's really sort of undermining itself and like sabotaging itself,
which is a shame because she's amazing.
Yeah,
like her performance is really, really great.
Dresden Patton's doing some great work. I think she's poorly cast for the single reason that she's supposed to be a spinster and she is 43 years old.
She's 43 and the woman playing her sister, and they're supposed to be like close in age.
Yes,
because they both were into the same guy.
Right.
And that's another one of those sort of late
stage. So to give you an idea of like the ages here, this episode debuted in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
Joyce Van Patten was born in 1934, making her 42 when this episode came out. Tim O'Connor, who played her brother, 1927.
Okay.
And then Celeste Holm, who plays her sister, 1917. So everyone who is at least 20 years older than her.
Right, so a bit of a jump there. But somehow they're
but
supposed to be
all
kind
all the
of...
same age. And then Jeannie Berlin, 1949. So she's only 6 years younger than Joyce Van Patten. So I think it's to Joyce Van Patten's credit. There's a lot of makeup that seems very inexplicable unless you sort of realize that she's just a young woman that they're very
desperately trying to make look
like in her 70s, which she isn't. But I think she does a fantastic job through everything.
Oh yeah.
But it's just they should have picked somebody else for this role.
they should have picked an
older actor to play an older actor. It's not her fault, I don't think. And I think she does a fantastic job with what she's presented with, but she's not the right person for this.
No, she's much younger than they are trying to present her as, and it
even through the makeup, I don't think it really works.
It's very
much a stage makeup-y kind of. She looks like she's coated in it, basically.
Yeah.
It's a little silly in that way.
Yeah. Which is a bummer because like I said, her performance is really good.
Unfortunately, she never came back for another episode.
This is a little,
that's true. Maybe this was a bad experience.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm very curious about it now, just, from the weird bits and bobs about that are so kind of different in it. And the weird, like...
It does at times feel like it's directed by different people.
Yeah.
In different points.
And it could be.
It could be.
It really could be.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Or it could be the kind of thing where, like, it was sort of kind of directed by one person and somebody else had to come in and clean it up afterwards.
Yeah, this might have been a reshoot sort of
situation.
And,
like, the ADR and stuff is part of what makes me think.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. You know, there's only so much information you can glean from now, from the internet.
From a show, from an episode of a show that is 43 years old?
76, yeah. 43 years.
Yeah.
I can't say this was my favorite episode.
It's
middle of the road. I think there are some great performances. Though I think she gives kind of a bad performance for the rest of it, I think that Jeannie Berlin, who plays Janie, does an amazing... The women's prison scene, by the way, I love their idea of women's prison, which is just everybody hangs out in their thing wearing, like, I guess everyone in women's prison wore like blue mini skirts. Like,
yeah, it was like it was a very short garment where it was like, well, it's kind of like being in, it's kind of like a prison garment, but we made sure to cut it so that it was exceptionally feminine and you could see most of her leg.
I don't think that they're that flattering even back in the 1970s.
No, but I don't think that's how they were. And but television. Yeah, no, but she's this, great in that scene.
There's this fantastic scene where Columbo comes in. He's arrested her because her aunt Ruth, Joyce Van Patten's character, has framed her for the murder.
Right, by planting a piece that she stole from the museum.
Right.
Basically that incriminates her.
Yeah, so Columbo comes in and shows her a bunch of stuff and shows her this piece, which essentially just looks like a little dish.
Well, he doesn't really show it to her. He just sort of just dumps out everything out. Yeah. In the bag. And she, you know, and she using, IDs the bag and stuff, but she's just
using it as an ashtray.
Yeah.
But it turns out that it's a rare Byzantine.
Yeah, it's like a
it's a Byzantine belt buckle, I believe.
Like a gold belt buckle.
Yes. That's sort of the hinge. That's the how she is exonerated, because if she knew what it was, she wouldn't be using it as an ashtray, because it's a very valuable whatever. Yeah. Also, I guess I don't understand why a museum is going under when they have like it seems like they could sell one of the pieces of their museum and keep the museum running for the remainder of the time.
Right.
Like, there's this giant bejeweled cross of, begins in
Cross of Coronado.
There is essentially the Cross of Coronado is one of the things that this guy steals. It's like this giant gold jewel encrusted.
Yeah. I mean, you watch him like pulling it out of the glass case that he has cut a circular hole into, and you're like, that's not going to fit. Oh no, it did. It did. Okay. Yeah. My bad.
But it's this like, it's giant, it's covered in jewels. And and there are multiple things that they have that appear to be these incredibly expensive. Like, any one of them could probably fund their museum for another 20 years.
I think we are meant to intuit that she would refuse to part with any piece in the collection.
I guess so.
And, you know, and would just insist, no, they're part of the museum. It's the museum, and the museum is important. Mm. Having said that, with you.
It would have been lovely if they had, like, actually brought that into the episode. Well, hey, Mac,
that's why they ADR'd during the lovers scene, so that we knew that he was shooing her out of his home before his wife returned.
Right. It's there's a lot of inference in a bad way, I think.
It's not clear stuff. Now, having said that,
yes,
I think we should also take note of the first scene that Joyce has with Edward, her brother. Her character is Ruth, and the brother's
Edward.
But when they have that first scene in her office, and he is staying in the office basically to continue to inventory everything, and is, you know, basically saying he's going to take the next 2 days and go through everything.
Yeah, she's going home.
Yeah, when she walks out of the room, she just flips the light switch off.
Yeah.
And he yells, basically, and she says, sorry, it's just habit. I really am doing everything I can to try and, you know, cut down on costs.
Yeah.
And that detail, that sort of automatic,
that's what ends up sort of starting on the road to her undoing. Is the lights
and
were
it was
off.
And it was really nice that they had that touch of foreshadowing ahead of it. And
it's a good little thing, but I think that's kind of it. I mean.
There's some scenes you've mentioned. You know,
there's a very weird scene with Daryl. Haircuts by Daryl.
Yeah.
So
a lot of Columbo like goes 70s into loud shirts, and then Daryl is
Columbo,
you know, Daryl's from the 70s because of where his shirt buttons
Columbo goes to this barber because Milton has had a new haircut. He's got a new suit, he's got a new watch, he's got kind of new everything.
He's wearing all this tropical weather gear.
For some reason, Columbo figures out where he got his haircut. I'm not clear on how he did that.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah, because he didn't have a receipt on him or anything in his pockets. It's not clear. But anyway, he figures out somehow
just miraculously
where he's got his haircut, and that turns out to be from a guy named Daryl. And Daryl is played by this character actor who I've seen in other stuff before. Picture on IMDb is from him being in MASH. He totally looks like a guy who would have been in MASH.
Oh, perfect.
But he's playing this very flamboyant gay hairdresser character.
Oh yeah, cranked all the way up.
he like Columbo comes in just to ask him a question, but the guy won't like stop and like answer a question for half a second. And yeah. So he's like, oh, you should just beat me up and arrest me and take me downtown. Go ahead, beat me. And right. It's like, what is happening right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, it's so weird because it just like it escalates into like absurdity.
Yeah.
And that's, you're right. That's a really great scene to bring up because it does such a good job of illustrating how you think you know what's going on, and then all of a sudden you're just like, what the fuck?
Right. And then the hilarious payoff to this scene is that Columbo gets a haircut and a manicure, and he has funny hair for
one scene. Literally one scene after
for
this.
The scene after this where he goes and talks to a watchmaker.
Yeah.
For another part of that, it's too boring. I won't even like bring it in here.
It's just more it's of just following more the
Columbo,
trail of
yeah,
right,
stuff.
Right, right.
But it's not worth enumerating in this podcast.
Yeah, it's not inherently boring. It's just in
but
this
the,
one.
But the guy, you know, as Columbo's about to leave, he goes, I like your style. Daryl?
Yeah, it's like, what?
Daryl's very famous. Like, I guess maybe they were down the street. Like that. Like maybe clearly. This guy did all of
well,
his thing on the same strip.
I do think that there is meant to be an insinuation that he went to all these swanky places.
Yeah, maybe he
to
went to
get
like
himself
a,
out
when he found one, and then yeah. He just kept going down.
Because Ruth did give him that advance when she set
right,
him up
right.
initially.
So I'm guessing there
the
was this tailor and this watchman, uh-huh. and they're all kind of in the same area. Yeah, so Columbo...
But
yeah,
also, like, it's never really clearly yeah. laid out like that.
Hmm. And it's I mean, having Columbo with this terrible haircut, it looks like a kind of a sort of a John Lennon kind of haircut, I would say. Like that
it's a,
era,
it's
like...
A, it's a tiny bit Beatles-ish.
Little Beatles-y,
in that way. Yeah.
And it's kind of a mod look, and...
It's
a perm. I believe it's a perm.
I don't know. I wanted unclear. To call it a perm just because
yeah.
it's gone in like one.
It's ridiculous. Whatever
and,
it is.
Yeah.
yeah
no,
then
it's
the
definitely
next
not
scene,
a perm.
It's completely gone.
It's just, it's like after that one scene and he looks in the, after he gets complimented on his hair, basically, he
it just
spends
goes back
the entire
to,
drive like just fucking up his haircut.
Yeah. I
getting all
so.
The product out of it.
That's Columbo.
Yeah.
No,
I get it.
It's
yeah, it's a weird one.
It's not. I wouldn't say it's great. You can skip this one if you want.
There's a lot of very 70s suits in it. I will say,
yeah,
like there's a lot of extremely loud plaids in very large lapels.
We had Shatner last time. We had this one. I mean, yeah. So far season six is not.
No, it's a rough start.
It's not so great. There was only one more episode left in this season.
Well, you know what though? I mean, so... I'll take Joyce over Shatner.
Yeah. Do you
want
to talk? Do you have
is.
Anything to say about the clothing before we take?
I mean,
take into the final stretch.
I really the. I mean, plaids. I don't know. The
this episode broke you.
Yeah, the flatline cop, like the milquetoast cop, who yeah. just doesn't bring anything. Like
Miller.
Thank you, Miller's first outfit is just one of the loudest damn plaids. it's really incredible.
It's kind
You're
of
just
an
like
orange,
how can
almost,
I not?
Isn't it?
Oh yeah. It's got. It's a lot of like brown and orange tones in it, but yeah. but you know, enormous lapel time everywhere, and then like later he's got like a gray herringbone, and it's the same kind of thing where it's like you look at those lapels and they're enormous,
yeah.
and there's plenty of that kind of stuff. I don't
Miller,
think
Miller is a you know as terrible as he is a fascinating when he's
oh,
on
yeah.
screen you can't look at anything
I
else because you're
not.
Just like what is this guy doing?
Because I'm literally waiting for the next really stupid obvious thing to
yeah.
come out of his mouth, or like when Columbo is reviewing all the stuff about the collection at the museum,
yeah,
and immersing himself in like Dark Ages stuff and all
right.
of this, you know, and he's basically talking about this, and yeah. Miller is just like, oh yeah, I know a little bit about
no,
that.
Hold on, please do it in the. Please do not give this character more.
Okay, you're gonna
inflection.
Have to do it.
Okay, Lieutenant, I know something about antiquities. No, that's too much. See, it's too much. It's very hard to deliver a line as flat as Miller is doing it. So I'm gonna give you go for it.
All right, I'll try. Lieutenant, I know something about antiquities.
No, see, nope,
it's too
yeah, much. Nope. Hold on, here we go. Lieutenant, I know something about antiquities.
Yeah, that's actually pretty close.
Because it's like a high tune, right, and then don't really like, none of the words connect to each other. They're all sort of like free floating as if
there's a nice touch where you kind of went up a little bit in pitch at the end. Like, so it's like this confusing, like, that wasn't a question.
Every statement is a question. Yeah, a little bit.
No, that's very true. Let me see. It's...
Otherwise, pretty unremarkable. I mean, costume wise, I
loved the, as they were kind of picking apart the, like, oh, he's really dressed up.
Yeah.
Like, he had
a Hawaiian shirt on.
He was wearing rubbers.
Right.
Which I really loved, which is just,
slip on shoes.
Yeah. They're like pull on, they're literally just made of rubber, and they go over your fancy shoes.
Yeah,
so
he was wearing like
don't
a,
ruin the
it
soles.
Looks like he's wearing what do they call those shoes with the they're multicolor, multi-tone.
Oh, maybe Spectator is what you're thinking
of?
Yeah,
I think that's what I'm thinking.
Spectator is a two-tone like that. There's also Saddle.
Yeah. They look kind of like bowling shoes a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't quite get like the full on.
We just got
enough
a good
to be
shot
like,
of the bottom more than the rest of it.
Yeah, where it's like a flawless, unmarked sole, which is
And
which was
he's also
good detail.
He's also, I thought was interesting, was the pockets of his suit also have the Hawaiian pattern on.
Oh,
them.
I missed that.
Did you miss that? Yeah,
yeah.
When they turn out
his
pockets
his
to show
socks,
that he's not carrying
but
anything.
I didn't...
They
pull
turn out his
like
pocket and it's got the lining that's the same as the thing.
That's a very good touch.
It's not a bad... I mean, it looks like not a bad suit.
No,
kind
that's
of into
true.
It.
Like, I really didn't have anything huge to note. Tim, like when Columbo interviews Tim...
The doctor,
yeah. He's got like a kind of grayish... dressing gown on that
right,
is like...
Right, because it's the middle of the night, I believe.
Yeah, that is... silk, and it's got kind of a little bit of slubbing in it. That was one of those things that I noticed and went, oh, that's really nice. The bandana print wallpaper is hilarious.
Right.
That's in Janie's room. Like, you'll just see it and you go, what? Why?
It just looks like one of those red bandanas that everyone
just
wears.
Like it's an uncut sheet of red bandana.
Janine,
for all you magic nerds.
Janine is a blood. She reps the bloods. what? And I'd say that's a fairly unremarkable episode. Like that's kind of
you watch for Joyce, I guess.
Yeah,
I watch
the prison scene, which is very enjoyable.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is you'll get a good couple of scenes. The prison scene and the catch are pretty strong.
I mean, this
because
is kind of
like
a good...
that's the thing, right? In the catch. There's clear, like, you get what I'm throwing down. Like when she basically says to Columbo, tell Jane, cause spoiler. Of course. I don't know why
spoilers.
I'm even saying it. I know. but she killed her ex-lover.
Right. Who is Janie's father and the husband and the ex, well, not ex-husband because he's, I mean, ex because
he's
dead. Ex
because he's dead,
but
not, they didn't get divorced.
Husband of her sister.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Her sister basically ran off with her guy.
When she was 3 months pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And then they had the baby and they came back and they were married.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no, I thought it was that Ruth is actually Janie's mother. That's what
no.
I thought they were trying to communicate
no,
is that.
No, no. Because
the other two got married, but...
No, they were saying that...
That
I believe
Ruth's
what they're saying is
was
that Ruth's sister was
months.
Already 3 months pregnant when they eloped.
Gotcha.
And then she gave birth to the baby and came back.
Yeah, see, the fact that we're not clear on this says
but
a
I
lot
believe,
about...
I believe that that's what happened and that...
And you're
Janie,
probably right, and
Janie,
I am probably just trying to make it
I think
into
her,
something that
her
makes more sense.
Her affinity with Janie is more... It is more of a surrogate mother thing because I think... Because her sister was such a bad mother and she loved this man even though she murdered him. She did love him and wanted to like have kids and she never had kids of her own. So there is that aspect to it.
But so in the catch, basically, Columbo is kind of pressing on that nerve along with the other stuff because he says, I don't think this is enough to convict you. However... If it goes to trial, all your dirty fucking laundry comes out.
Yeah.
And she basically turns to him before, like, without saying anything about I'm guilty, you got me, or but just says, tell Janie that you lied about me killing her dad.
Right, and that there. Well, first she says We won't need to be a trial.
Yeah, there doesn't have to be a trial. Says, tell. And then she, and that's a point where I feel like the attempt to use subtext and nonverbal communication works in this episode.
It's just that
there's a lot of places where it doesn't.
It wasn't set up enough clearly, since we're not clear on the event, and we don't necessarily need to be like,
no,
there are times when it's okay for a little ambiguity, but
I prefer it honestly with a lot of stuff, but there's still a, like, it's at missing
at the very least we shouldn't be as confused as we are now, having just watched it, the both of us, and paying attention to the point of taking notes.
Yeah.
We should be able to follow
taking
along.
Like 3 pages of notes. Yes, I think exactly. I took, I mean, they're garbage
and they're small pages, but
no, I see how it is.
No, I'm saying, when you say 3 pages, we're not talking about 3 notebook pages. We're talking about 3, you know,
field notes pages.
I think that'll.
Please, yeah.
I think maybe we should do it.
That's it.
Yeah. That'll do it for this week. So next week we'll be taking a look at season 6, episode 3. It's the Bye Bye Sky High IQ Murder Case. That is the name of the episode.
Well, I'm sorry. One more time.
That is the Bye Bye Sky High IQ Murder Case, with Theodore Bickle. Is the star of that one, and also has Kenneth Mars Kenneth Mars. You know who that
Kenneth
is.
Mars.
And
I'm gonna act like I do not know.
You remember Young Frankenstein, the sergeant?
Oh,
that's Kenneth Mars.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a known comedic actor.
Gotcha.
So that'll be next week. But this week, this episode, whatever I'm saying. It's done.
It's done. Let's get out of
this. That's going to do it.
Thank
this
you.
This has been Cologne Boys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing, sir.
Yeah, what's up?
Hey, I like your style. Daryl?
How did you know?
Cologne Boys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Cologne Boys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.